Ready to roll?
I'm ready to roll.
Hot McGiggity.
And I'll give us an intro. Ryan Dam, CEO, correct?
I guess CEO, yeah.
I guess so.
Co-founder for sure. You know, CEO sounds so silly when you have a 6-7 person company. It's like...
the chief executive.
Yeah, yes, right.
Everyone, like, everyone's chief.
How many other executives do you have? It's 7 people. It's
5 of the 7.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Chief. But I'm definitely the chiefest of them, for sure.
Well, you just ordered one to go fill up your meter, so...
I feel bad about that. Sorry, Scott.
That's
the chief. Hello and welcome back to the Research VR podcast. Today is another wonderful and exciting episode about another part of science of the virtual realities. And today we're talking about the light fields, actually. And what is, and I say light fields because there's, you know, it's a buzzword. And there's there's light field cameras, there's light field displays.
There's a lot of things that aren't light field that people just stick a label on. Yeah.
Exactly. And so we're going to get through that, the mountain of jargon, and we're going to get down to the essentials and what it means to have, you know, what is light field. And so to bring it all home is my close friend, actually. I met you a good year ago, and we've just been talking about light
back
field.
Back when this place was a construction zone. Yeah.
Yeah. That man's that voice that you just heard is Ryan Dam. CEO of Visby, which is a full stack light field camera.
Yes, full stack light field. We do have things to say about cameras, but we're much more of a software company. Right. And that full stack phrase, actually, I think I have to credit to Will Mason. I think he's the first one who called us that. Could be, yeah.
Cool.
Or maybe it was you. One of you guys
dubbed
us that.
I call this studio Full Stack Mixed Reality Studio.
Okay, well, there you go. Yeah. As long as we're starting with the jargon, let's just...
Yeah, exactly. Let's start with a stack. Where in the stack do you sit, actually? Are you on the top? No. So, I mean, let's start from the beginning. Light fields, you said it's actually... And just to disclose to people, this is our third time recording this podcast, and like it hasn't been working out. And
it's like almost like you'd think we knew something about tech or something. But no,
you think this is my first time doing a podcast, but like every time we sat down with you and your co-founder halfway through the episode, like my MacBook stopped recording, and so now we're not recording on that anymore.
Yeah,
and,
there's too much awesomeness for one Mac.
Too much. I know. I just couldn't handle that amount of science that was in one episode. So we'll do
well,
our
unfortunately,
best.
Without Chris here, it's a lot less sciencey. My co-founder's a particle physicist and neuroscientist.
So. Trust me, you bring enough science into this that I even boggles my mind. So
fair enough.
So Ryan, I mean, light field. It's not a new, I guess, physics idea.
No, I mean it's a very basic idea, actually. If you think about it, I think we take vision for granted a bit, right? We sort of skip the step of what it means to see, and we just think like, oh, well, I perceive this 3D world that I live in. Mm. But in practice, like, we're actually walking around this like big sea of photons all the time, right? And physicists were kind of hip to this a long time ago. I mean, you go back to like the ancient Greeks, and they were sort of speculating like, well, there's these things that are moving in straight lines. There's these rays, right? And so that was sort of the core of the idea. And the idea was that these light rays are all around, right? And so that's functionally what a light field is. Even when we're talking about making content for VR and AR headsets, really, we're just grounded in the fact that we see using light. And it sounds heretical. It sounds weird. Light field sounds all buzzy. But at the end of the day, these headsets, whether it's a AR or MR or VR, they're really just a very specialized hunk of hardware for pouring light into our eyes, right? That's a kind of natural way to think of them. Yeah. And light fields are really just trying to engage with that directly. You know, all volumetric or you know, game engine based experiences are kind of using a polygon model to figure out what light to show you.
Sure.
And all light field is really saying is like, what if we either don't have a polygon model or have an enriched polygon model in which we really just look at light itself. So,
I guess the way I always think of it is like, it's a box of light lines and vectors of certain light and color, right?
Yeah, I mean, color, you can think of color as just being a subset of it.
Sure, it's a wavelength of
exactly, right? So you can represent any visual color with just three different values.
Right.
Anyway, let's not get into the color science, because that's another rabbit hole. But yeah, I like the box metaphor, right? Sure. If you think if you drew an invisible box around someone and you captured or sampled or able to reconstruct every single light ray that was entering that box, then in a VR headset or some other display, you could give them what they would have seen as they move around inside that box, no matter which way they look, right? If they look to the left, then you sort of sample the light rays coming from the left that would have passed through the box and entered their eye, and you deliver that to them, right?
Yeah.
Or right, you know, those are the light rays you look at.
Right.
Very natural. And the key thing is, what it means is you can move around, right? As a person moves around inside that box, you're just sampling different light rays. Right?
So if you have the entire box mapped out, I mean, the inside of the box is mapped out of light rays, You can think of the VR headset as like a plane that's just in that box, and that if you move in the room, you're moving that plane through it, and you're just seeing the intersections of where that plane is cutting the light lines that are coming through.
Yeah, I actually abstract away the headset and think of the person's pupil.
Okay, right?
So they're walking around. What the VR headset is basically a guarantee that if you light up a pixel at this XY position on the raster, the optics of the headset are going to steer that light onto the retina in a certain spot, right?
Sure.
Or, you know, I guess they can move their eyes around, but it's going to steer it towards their pupil in a certain spot. And what that means is you're basically addressing the ray direction they would have seen, right? Mm-hmm. And so the key thing is if they got a headset on and they're looking all around, you know which direction they're looking, you can deliver the correct ray. That's true of 360 video, right? If you got a Gear VR on and you're watching some 360 video, no matter where they look around, you know what direction they would be looking, you can deliver that. What's missing though, and why you need light fields rather than 360 video, is if that person then takes a step forward, right? If they start to translate through space, now you do know which direction they're looking, but you have to be able to deliver a new perspective to them. It's a totally different set of rays, yeah. Right? And so what light fields really are is an opportunity to say, okay, if we can really capture and describe every single light ray across this extended surface, then that means anyone who's walking around inside that surface, we can basically direct the right rays into their pupil.
Cool. It's an incredibly promising idea, I think.
It is. So simple though, right?
Right.
Fundamentally,
why is it an old idea? I mean, you've told me that there's been people that have experimented with light field arrays. I mean, even back in the 1900s.
Yeah, early 1900s. Actually, a physicist. Oh my gosh, it's been too long since I've given the presentation. Yeah. His name escapes me, but he was Marie Curie's thesis advisor back in the day. Actually, made a proposal. He didn't build it. He just like drew up like a cross section of a way of making basically a light field array, and it looked exactly like the micro lens actually that's embedded inside of like Lytro's early consumer cameras.
Hmm.
Right? It was a series of little spherical curvatures on glass. And his point was, hey, if we paint photographic emulsion on the back of this thing, right, and you put it out in the world, and you take a picture, right, expose the negative, and then develop it. What you'll really be doing is you'll be recreating every single light ray, because the spherical surfaces will focus bundles of light rays into a single spot, which will then expose the silver halide crystals. I think that's the photographic chemistry they're using. Uh-huh. And then later you can illuminate it and recover each sort of individual spot on the back of that glass plate. Will then produce basically a bundle of light rays that should be like a simulation of the light rays that the original thing saw.
So I'm trying to understand actually how you would be able to look at a light field image even without any kind of digital.
Yeah. So in this original array,
what is it focused on? If you have focus on,
was just recreating the light field exactly at the plane that it was taken in. Right. So it's almost like a snapshot, but it's a window, not a poster. Right.
okay.
Yeah. And so you know, if you imagine if you set it up in a room and then you looked at it later, in theory, or at least what they speculated, is it would be like you were looking through that virtual window back onto that moment the photo was taken. And as you walk around, you would see around objects, things would parallax correctly. It wouldn't just be a single perspective. Now it's
but really you wouldn't important. Be able to do that with an analog picture, right? I mean,
well, that was the idea though, was that the silver halide on the back, once you developed it into a, I guess it wasn't silver halide, it was a positive image. So once you developed it in the back, you could then shine light through it, and the basically the emulsion would block out light rays in the right way, so it would recreate the original image.
Whoa.
That's the theory.
Interesting. Okay.
However, something that's really crucial that's missed is that the way the system worked is light rays would come in one direction. Right. And if you want to recreate a window, you got some light ray coming in at some angle. You want to keep going in that direction to simulate the view through a window. And if you want a mirror, it bounces off the mirror and keeps going at sort of the same angle. This was actually like retro reflective. So the light rays that you create would have been kind of played back in the opposite direction. Right. A ray coming into the plate would have now been simulated going back out.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that's like not correct, that optically it's depth reversing. It'd be sort of like if you had your left eye and right eye swapped in a like a stereo 360, right? Or just a stereo 3D image, right? Like depth would be
like
all
a negative,
wrong and
right.
weird. Yeah. And I've seen this done. This was a research paper ages ago where someone did these kind of, I think they're called pseudoscopic views, and they look really weird. If you try to do a cross-eyed fusion on them, mm-hmm. like it looks really wrong because all these visual cues about depth.
Is it just depth is completely the opposite?
It's totally opposite. Yeah. And the weird thing is you get this neural conflict where one part of your vision system is telling you this thing's in the foreground and the other part's being like, no, it's in the background.
And
you get this like instability where it seems to flip and invert in really weird ways.
So what you're describing is that if you're just flipping the stereoscopic depth cue, but there's still all the rest of the depth cues that you have, right? Like relative size, relative distance,
Convergence,
whatever, occlusion, all these things that
If they're not agreeing together, then
yes.
brain just goes
yes.
haywire.
There's tons of conflict. And honestly, I don't actually know what an inverted life would look like. We should try it out, right?
Yeah,
it
sounds like
we got software to do it. We just, I think somewhere in the software stack, we just throw a negative sign in there, right? And see what happens. In our early experiments, we actually did have pseudoscopic effects, you know? And this is the challenge when you're trying to build these systems, is no one's ever really done it before. So you can't even tell what you're doing wrong, right? Like things start to look all wacky and weird, and you're stuck kind of trying to troubleshoot just weird visuals.
There's no Google or there's no Stack Overflow threads that you're going to find to help you fix these problems,
yeah,
right?
No,
yeah,
yet.
Okay.
That's what we'll pivot into if life gets really huge.
It's actually, that's a problem with most VR troubleshooting. It's like, there's not that many users that like it's at the highest ranking in Google searches. So it's, you're kind of, you know, out by yourself with trying to troubleshoot a lot of these things.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I guess it's not unique to light fields.
not to say your job isn't hard.
Oh, my job's easy. It's the engineers who are actually building it who have hard jobs. I get to just like go on podcasts and talk about it.
That's true. That's a fun job.
Yeah.
So I want to transition this again to other forms of light field that people in the audience probably have heard. So light field displays. Sure. I've seen one from Stanford, one of the Stanford researchers, where they had essentially planes in a tensor display.
Yeah. I think it came out of MIT. The lead researcher on that is now at Stanford. And I'm going to, this is not a good day for me remembering names.
Names don't matter.
Gordon Wetstein. Tensor display, super clever. I mean, so let's unwind this a little bit. A light field display is one that can deliver, this sort of field of light, right? Which means that a given pixel, if you can think of a pixel at the output of the array, will change color and intensity based on your position, based on your perspective, right? Because as you walk around it,
Is that not the same as a normal VR display? I mean, that pixel is moving every time I'm changing every time
VR
I move
displays
my head.
Are holographic, fundamentally. That's one of our core theses, is like these are the first holographic displays, right? If you have positional tracking, right? If you got positional tracking, it means as you move around, your perspective changes and the display can keep up, right?
I see. Okay.
And that's what the tensor display
holographic
does as well.
Just in the terms of like how you set it, how you use it makes it a holographic rather than, you know, the way the pixels are made or the way the display, because the display is still a phone display.
Okay, look, there's a little abusive terminology here and I'll take responsibility for that.
I just want to throw more buzzwords at people.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, here's the thing. I use the word holographic because it's evocative, right? I mean, how do you talk about an image that changes as you walk around it? The most concrete thing that we're aware of in our daily life that does that is a hologram.
Agreed.
Holographers would probably take issue with this and say, look, a hologram is this thing that leverages the wave nature of light. And they do recreate light fields. Like fundamentally, a hologram is a system for reproducing light fields, right?
Yeah.
But they do it in a very specific way that requires like wave interference and all sorts of stuff. And it's this beautiful analog craft. It's amazing. It's also a great word. And I'm totally going to like co-opt it to apply it to these more generalized technologies because I think it's something people understand, right?
I think so. And that's my perfect way of describing AR elements to people. It's like, it's a hologram. You know, and people, and it's such a great pop culture reference that people can attach themselves to.
Unfortunately, it's such a good reference. It also gets applied to everything, right? And so even like low level Pokemon Go style AR being described as holographic and other approaches that I describe as more volumetric are getting the holographic moniker, which...
So just tied back to the light field displays.
Right.
So yeah, what was that research that was being shown that made that display more special than what we have currently?
Well, I mean, the research itself was some pretty heavy math, and that's why it's called the tensor display, right? When the thing's named after like a mathematical construct, you know that, you know, there's some serious nerdery going on.
Any connection to like TensorFlow from Google or that's...
I don't think so, beyond the fact that a tensor is just a very large, you can think of it as a higher dimensional matrix, I think is the proper way to think of it.
Cool.
What they're basically doing is they said, okay, here's a fundamental problem with a holographic panel display, right? A VR headset's holographic, and as you walk around, you only need to light up the pixels that the person's going to see, right? So you know in like, an Oculus or a Vive, you're lighting up about 2 million pixels, you know, every frame, right? And that's all you have to light up. So even though you might have to carry around, billions of pixels to represent the scene properly from every possible perspective, you only have to deliver one perspective at a time. Right, just your system has to be capable of synthesizing or finding.
Renders it in real time.
So yeah, exactly.
Sure.
Exactly. The problem with a holographic panel, is if you don't know where the user is and you have to deliver every possible display simultaneously, the bandwidth you have to deal with, the number of sort of rays or pixels that you have to draw is unbounded. I mean, it's an exponential increase in the amount that you have to
draw. What do you mean by panel? That's the camera array that's...
Oh, captured. No, I'm just talking about displays, like the tensor display, right? So say in the future, we all live in the Jetsons world, right? Our TVs aren't going to be flat. Like, they're going to look like a window. You're going to turn it on and boom, it's like the wall falls away and now I can see out onto whatever scene I want, whether it's a basketball court for an NBA game, or it's, you know, the Swiss Alps to relax me, whatever the heck it is. It's going to look real, though. It's not going to look like a poster on my wall. It's going to look like a window, right? And for it to look like a window, as you move around, even small movements, you got to see around objects. Reflections have to look right. Okay. So the challenge, if you're going to build that big holographic display, is if you want to be able to deliver every possible perspective simultaneously, because a person could be anywhere in the room, then you've got to be able to deliver a very, very, very high resolution image in four dimensions, right? That's the dimensionality of a light field on a plane is four dimensions, right? Okay. Which means that if it's got to be, you know, a 2-megapixel view, and you got to have this very fine grained display for wherever they might be standing, you run into like gigapixels and terapixels really, really fast. Mm.
And that's because like there's some kind of tracking of where the person is and to where you're delivering the light into his eye from what angle.
VR, exactly. So in VR, you know exactly which pixels need to light up. So you only have to do
because
that
the eyes don't set. Because the eyes are looking at the panel from one perspective, right?
Like, you got to guarantee where they are. If the headset's got positional tracking, you know their XYZ position, and then you know the angle they're looking at, right? And so what you do is you just got to use that information as the, if you imagine you are the software stack drawing those pixels, you take that input and you say, okay, I'm gonna light up these pixels in this particular way because I know that their pupils are here and here. So you basically have two views to deliver a stereo view, just like that.
Right.
In a holographic panel, if it doesn't have any notion of where its users are, it's got to draw every possible one because they could be anywhere. So anyway, it gets really exponentially bad really quickly. What was clever about the Tensor Display is they used, they basically used the fact that there's a lot of redundancy in a light field to use a series of occluders to basically let the pixels they were lighting up on an OLED panel do lots and lots of double, triple, quadruple duty. The basic structure is you got an OLED display on the back.
Okay.
You've got a lens lit array in front of that. You can use the inverse of the lens lit array in a Lytro camera. So basically what it means is that each individual pixel on that OLED display is now being mapped to a ray bundle that's shooting off the display, right? So it's coming off of a particular location, but it also is coming off at a particular angle, which means that you as the software can address an individual ray bundle, right? Which is important. That's how you
can holographic. Each pixel always will get a light coming from a very particular angle, or can that pixel receive, not pixel, What do you call the photoreceptors on the actual sensor?
A photosite.
Okay. Yeah. So that each photosite is going to get one particular angle of light coming at it at all times.
So that's how it works inside of a traditional, if these things can be called traditional, light field camera, right?
Sure.
That
yeah.
There's this micro lens array, and every photosite underneath that micro lens array is receiving light that only strikes a particular area, that specific micro lens that it's under, at a particular direction. The microlens is effectively sorting the light rays so that each individual photosite is only getting a single direction of ray.
Okay.
Right. So the Tensor Display is just the converse of that, right? You've got your pixel elements that are emitting light, and the microlens array above it then steers the light coming off of a single pixel element into a single direction.
It's almost like an encoder decoder situation where totally. The camera is the encoder and the display is the decoder.
Yeah, no, they're perfectly analogous.
It's a teleportation encoder decoder.
Random little thing if you want to see what that looks like, actually. Yeah. Is if you get little tiny droplets of water on your camera, on your phone rather, what you'll notice is under the droplet of water, all of a sudden you'll see like these bright blobs of color.
Mm.
What you're seeing is all of the light coming off of a single pixel being mapped into your eye. Right, it's basically a micro lens.
Because that's where the lens focal point.
Yeah, and as you turn your camera, what you notice is those blobs of color change color very quickly. Because what you're doing is you're scanning across the pixels underneath that droplet of water and looking at the different little RGB elements. It's one of those little tiny like lovely things about light that I sort of get a kick out of when it rains.
Cool.
Yeah.
The other part about I think a light field display is that it supports focal changes in your eye. So
let's draw a really sharp distinction here.
Sure.
There are what I call macroscopic light fields and microscopic light fields. Okay.
And that's on the capturing or
capture
the display
and
side?
Display, as it turns out. So
I should draw out a whole table here.
Grid, right? Yeah. Well, there is a grid. If you want to do the grid, okay. On the capture side, you got macroscopic light fields, and that's what I'm interested in. That's like holographic imaging. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you've got microscopic light fields. That's the original Lytro camera, right? That does refocusing. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then on the playback side, macroscopic holographic displays, VR, AR headsets, large panels that are mostly theoretical but include the Tensor Display, are doing basically holographic displays.
Sure.
What you think of as a hologram, right? You move around, you see different objects. Then in the far corner, you've got this like really weird subset of light field displays that are microscopic light field displays.
And so that's stuff like the original Lytra pictures that you can play with?
No, well, not really. Because what they're basically doing is they're always delivering you a two-dimensional view. To me, a light field display, whether it's macroscopic or microscopic, is delivering you a four-dimensional display of some kind.
So what's a microscopic light
field display? Well, in theory, what Magic Leap is theoretically maybe building, right? Something in which there's focus accommodation. So here's a way to hash it, right? Macroscopic light fields give you new perspectives. Microscopic light fields convey focus. And it doesn't matter if you're capturing or displaying.
Okay.
So that's one way to think about it. Now, you know, there's, I think NVIDIA also did a microscopic light field headset display.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, it just as, you know, R&D kind of thing. And again, the problem with displays is always going to be that if you are locked into displaying every four-dimensional ray of light, you got to have a lot of display elements, and you're going to pay a very serious effective resolution penalty, which is why I think Magic Leap started to go with discrete focal planes, right? I think they're originally going to do 5, and now it might be down to 2. This is all totally speculative. Yeah. I have no inside knowledge about this stuff, but...
That's what I keep hearing, too, is like the focal planes keep going lower and lower, and that was originally a thing that really excited me, is that they had variable focal planes through Alvarez lenses that were kind of moving, and that had micro movements. This is all stuff that I was like reading through their patents, but like apparently, I don't know, you know.
Well, the thing is, I don't know. I spent a little time thinking about it, but probably not enough.
So before we dive in a little bit more, I think it would be useful to explain why you'd want these focal planes to be there, or why, you know, what are these focal planes for your eyes? Currently with VR headsets, your focus is actually at infinity. That's how the lenses are shaped, so that you can see things clearly. If you have an object that's close to you and you close one eye and then you focus at something behind it, you know, it's the focus won't change. We covered this with Dominic from NVIDIA a couple episodes ago. Great episode to go listen to it. We mentioned a little bit of light fields there, but I wanted to do a full episode here. With Magic Leap and a few other, you know, of these light field displays that are promising, is that it's going to have these different ways of projecting these virtual objects so that your eyes can actually focus better, and it causes less eye strain and it looks more real.
I always feel like I need to put a little caveat here. Okay. I have like 20/100 vision or something, not great vision. So I am constantly walking around and the light entering my eyes is actually focused beyond infinity.
Are you myopic?
Yes.
Then? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Not something that a tech entrepreneur should admit, but yes, I'm nearsighted.
The camera guy, right?
Yeah, right. Well,
you know what's crazy is that I work on green screens and I'm actually red-green colorblind slightly.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. So. Wild. Do you know that there are, someone came out with glasses
and
that
chromas
help with color, color discrimination.
I need to get on
totally
those.
Wild. We should have a color discussion. It's a fascinating field, but not today.
Not today.
Yeah. So my big complaint is, honestly, I think people overrate how much focal accommodation matters, right? Like if
really?
Well, sure. If having the wrong focal accommodation led to eye strain, I would be walking around with a headache all day. I wear glasses.
That's true.
Right?
But think of wearing someone else's glasses for a while. And
you get used to it. You do.
I hear you, but I think it's still important.
Okay.
Would you rather have not have focal accommodation than would having it in a headset?
I don't think it's worth the penalty you pay, unless it's being done in a clever way.
You're saying the rendering is really hard to do, or just even the hardware.
Well, it's this exponentially exploding resolution problem. Mm. At the end of the day, what gets painted onto your retina is a two-dimensional image, always and forever, okay? So what you could do in theory is if you knew where the person was accommodating their focus, you could draw the correct two-dimensional image on there, and you only have a two-dimensional raster to draw.
You can fake it just through foveated rendering and blurring
things.
It goes
a bit beyond foveated rendering. You call it sort of focus accommodation rendering or something.
Sure.
As long as we're cutting through jargon, let's invent some new jargon here.
But
there's got to be some word for that.
Sure.
But it really means that, like, if you knew exactly what two-dimensional image they would be seeing, you only need to address that two-dimensional image. A light field display that's drawing a small scale light field across someone's pupil has to have very high four-dimensional resolution to deliver good continuous focal accommodation, right? And I think that's a bit of a pipe dream because of this sort of exponentially exploding a resolution problem.
Okay, that's fair. And I don't think the resolution is going to change in the next year, actually, or next year and a half, just because, like, it's not that it's diminishing returns, but it's like we still haven't maxed out the current resolution that we have now. We don't render as much as we can.
It's my strong prior that we're not taking advantage of the resolution we have in the current.
No, not at all.
Right. No polygon model, and certainly no 360 video is really addressing every individual pixel yet. And actually, there's reasons why you actually don't want to get down to you need to jump the chasm. You need to go from like blocks of pixels down to the sub-pixel level. Otherwise, you run into aliasing problems.
I was going
to
say,
then
that's a lot more rendering, right?
It's not just more rendering. It's that you know, you're not actually addressing a fixed raster when someone's wearing a VR or AR headset, right? As they move, they could move like a 20th of a degree and now, or rotate their head. And now you're on a totally different raster. And if you're trying to address those things at the same frequency as the pixel pitch, you're going to get all sorts of weird moiré effects and stuff. So, you actually really, if you want to really unlock the power of these displays, you need to have some crazy super resolution going on in your, in your renderer.
Cool. Yeah. Another question that keeps coming up is, or that I keep hearing is you keep using the word four dimensional. What does that mean in terms of light fields? And is the fourth dimension time in this sense?
No, that's a common misconception. So I think the easiest way to think about the four dimensions of a light field is to think of a light field window. Okay.
Okay.
A window you can think of as just, it's a slice to the light field that's in a space, right? And think of all the light that's going through it in one direction. Okay. If you wanted to specify an individual light ray that was passing through that window, you'd have to have four parameters to describe it. You'd use, say, X and Y to specify the exact spot on the window that that light ray was entering. And then, but that would give you a whole selection of light rays that are all coming together at that point, right, from different directions. And so if you want to specify the individual light ray, you then have to use two more parameters or dimensions to specify
its vector
direction.
That it's coming at, and what's the other dimension?
To specify direction in three dimensions, you actually need two dimensions.
Oh, cool.
It's like latitude and longitude, basically.
Got it.
There is actually a third dimension there, if you talk about 6 degrees of freedom.
Oh, wow. Because right? It's not going to be, what if it's not a straight line? You're saying what if
it has
it's
to be
bend?
A straight line. That's how light moves.
Okay.
But we don't care about rotation around the ray of light.
What if there's gravity?
So rotation around the ray of light does matter. It's called polarization. It does not matter, however, for our practical purposes.
Rotation right? around a ray of light.
What's rays of light do have orientation, a rotational orientation. Mm. It's called polarization.
Sure.
And so, you know, in a typically unstructured, unpolarized environment, the polarization of a particular ray of light will be changing randomly. Mm. And so we call it unpolarized.
Wow. Like random.
Yeah. Over time, it's changing its rotational orientation. Keep in mind, this is like, we're way off the beaten track now. Like none of this matters for displays, right? Like humans can't perceive polarization directly there's a very tiny asterisk on that. So it's not part of our normal visual environment.
Okay.
It's these things called Purkinje lines. It's supposedly when you're looking at very, very polarized sources, you can see these very faint brush type shapes in your peripheral vision. And it turns out that certain parts of our eye may react slightly differently or do react very slightly differently to differently polarized light.
Interesting. So that looks like a smear almost? Or?
I actually never have seen it, to be honest. I've read about it in textbooks. I've never experienced it myself.
Fascinating.
So I'm just, I don't know. Not useful here.
Well, I mean, it's fascinating. I think there's a lot of information that I'm sure people are hearing and don't really know how it applies yet. But I guess there was a piece of news this week that is bringing light fields a little bit closer to reality with Lytro, right?
Right.
They got another 60 million dollars of funding, and they're promising to bring out content that for people to watch in Q2.
Is the content out in Q2, or are they going to be doing shooting experiences in Q2?
No, they're saying first consumer release of content is going to be in Q2. Let me check.
Great. Well, they might be ahead of schedule. I'd heard that they were going to start shooting Q2. This was like a year ago. Mm. So it sounds like they've really delivered on that timeline.
So I've seen the original, little teaser that they put out there, the 30-second, the moon landing in a studio.
I haven't. I feel bad. I've never actually
seen it.
You haven't? No, no.
We should set up a demo.
I'm a bad light field person. Bad.
What can people expect from from their first experience with a light field video? What things to look out for? Artifacts.
Potential artifacts. Again, I haven't seen it.
Totally. But how do you judge the quality of a light field video?
Well, look, it should be photographically realistic, and you should have positional tracking.
Okay.
That's really the promise of light fields, right? And the truth is, particularly at this stage of the technology, there will be artifacts. And there's artifacts in polygon-based approaches. There's artifacts in 360 video. So, I don't know enough about how they're running their system under the hood to intelligently speculate about the kind of artifacts you might see. I do know there is a polygon model that they use as well. There's a 3D scanner, at least I heard last year, involved in the actual capture of the light field. It's probably beyond the scope of this podcast, but there's reasons why that's a really powerful way to augment the light
field. I think it's pretty relevant in terms of you're seeing mapping out the geometry that's around the camera and then overlaying it.
So here's the basic core problem when you try to capture light fields. You inevitably right now are using camera arrays as tightly packed as you can get a bunch of, and there's pictures that came out with this press release. They've got this 91 camera, hexagon basically.
Not like that ball of camera, that ball that they first had a render of like a year and a half ago.
You know, I read a, I think it was a TechCrunch article where they're saying like, oh, they had to completely re-engineer it to be planar. It's like re-engineer, it was a CAD drawing.
It was,
like,
it was
good Lord, there was no engineering that at all. Some of the designer drew that, you know?
I could have drawn that. It looked really cool.
I guarantee you the benchtop model those guys were working with at the beginning look a lot more like the actual product we're seeing today than those CAD drawings did.
So light field cameras are going to be flat, big panel arrays.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. No, I wouldn't say that at all. I mean, there is actually an example of a spherical light field capture, which is Otoy's, actually. Ooh. Paul DeBevic was involved with this. The
next top
DSLR on a spinning gantry. That was spherical, right? That camera, as it panned around across the 3 or 4 hours it was doing its scan, was describing the outside of a sphere.
So that was a DSLR that's on a track that's just going around in 360.
It's called a Gigapan. It's a device that's meant for panning a still camera so you can take these very large panoramic photos. And they just reused it. Basically, what it is, they did the same thing. They used settings, so it took a lot of photos with a very wide-angle lens and a very closely spaced raster around the sphere. And then they processed it, right? Otoy's work was like, okay, now let's actually like take a look at these light rays and do stuff with them.
Did they just take pictures of a sphere, but not like the points within the sphere?
Correct.
Okay. Interesting.
Because light rays move in a straight line, if you've got all the light rays that are impinging on the outside of the sphere, you now know what the light rays are inside the sphere if the camera ray hadn't been there.
Right? Okay.
That's
why you have a flat array of, you wouldn't need to have like a depth of camera arrays on a thing.
Okay. What you would have to do is you'd have to build a box, right? Like if you wanted someone to have a 360 view, no matter where they were standing inside that box, you'd need to have all the sides of the box covered. Okay. And I'm sure this is, I mean, look, this is something that's kind of obvious, but if you only have one camera or you have to have the crew somewhere, you shoot it in takes, like Felix and Paul meant, right? And so, you know, provided you're never actually stitching, right? These things should stitch more or less perfectly. Stitching is not a problem in light fields. That's the good news. But you'd have to align the light fields that you captured between takes, right? So obviously if there was like a crew member was foolishly standing right on the edge, you might have half of them in one shot and not in the other.
And that's how Lytro described to me that's how they captured the first teaser that they showed. It was that they took their plant panel, they shot it, and then they rotated by like 20. No, what's 360 divided by 5?
Come on, quick. 70.
It's like 72? Yeah.
Yeah, 72 degrees. Like
that. You rotated by that much and you take another still or video, full video, and then so they rotated it 5 times and then got a full 360.
Right.
The end result was pretty cool. I think I'm still trying to get to the full understanding of how to judge these things, you know, like, and
judge them against other VR experiences is what I would say.
And
it's the only light field experience out there. And so there is no frame of light field to judge against, but it is a very compelling technology. And I'd say what we should be deciding right now is how far along are light fields compared to other technologies, right? They're starting from a lower base, right? If you're doing volumetric stuff, you know, 8i on corporeal, even Hype, I think, is doing something volumetric. You get to leverage the entire 3D stack, right? You're doing some stuff on one end and some stuff on the other end, but you have this whole 30 years of video game history to draw on, drawing polygons and textures. Light fields don't get to do that.
Why are light field cameras important to you? And this goes beyond just, I don't want the answer just to be to be able to move in a 360 video.
Sure. Well, I can tell you exactly why they're important to me personally. I have a background in filmmaking and cinematography and photography, and I want to really capture the world photographically. I don't want to know about the 3D shape of it. The 3D shape is only relevant to me insofar as it makes interesting compositions, interesting pictures, interesting views. And to me, when I started looking at the tools in 360 video in particular, they were not particularly photographic.
What is a 3D? You said you're not interested in the 3D shape of it. What do you mean in terms of photogrammetry or?
I really more mean in terms of, I don't want to be dealing with it, right? I know a teeny bit of 3D CAD, right? Okay. But I'm not a 3D animator and the tools are totally foreign to me.
Right.
And I think if VR and AR are really going to take off as a medium, there need to be tools out there so someone can go and grab a camera, a cinematographer, a photographer, and capture experiences that are photographically beautiful and photographically correct, right? You shouldn't have to be shooting the scene and being worried about whether or not this is going to scan correctly or, you know, what it's going to look like. It should be something where when you stand in the space and you look around, you can be confident that if you use your tools correctly, you will capture that space as it looks and not have to, like, you know, imagine through the entire 3D chain. Now, that said, that's an insane... optimistic.
It's a big ask, yeah.
Yeah, because the truth is, even with traditional cameras, there is a degree of what your tools do to the image. But right now, those tools that were being used for VR were too much of a barrier. They weren't a creative implement like a paintbrush that let you get the effect you were looking for. Mm. They were this impediment that had to be cleared and worked around and worked within. And really, the reason Light Fields matter to me is it feels to me like the best approach for getting that paintbrush.
Cool. Well said. Okay, we're done here.
Get out.
It's fascinating. I think I'm sure a lot of the people listening into this have been fascinated by what Light Field is, and they don't even know why they keep hearing this word again. It sounds great, right? You know, Light Fields, more rays of light and six DOF tracking and all these words, but you know, why it actually matters and how it's actually going to change, you know, storytelling and, do you think it actually opens up a certain bit of interactivity within video experiences?
You know, it's funny. Interactivity is the one area that I don't think light fields are best suited for. Mm. So I joke, I used to be a light field fundamentalist and now I'm sure. Just an evangelist. I used to say light fields were going to eat everything. And as I thought about it more, it occurred to me that I think the future is actually going to be much more of a hybrid. I think that we're going to have polygon-based approaches, particularly for interactive experiences, but also for cinematic ones.
And so polygon-based approach means there's some kind of a GPU rendering of not real,
Well, I mean, I don't know. Things? Would you call the work that AI is doing not real? They're rendering polygons, right?
Got it.
They're
okay,
polygons so they that are captured from the real world, represented as polygons, and then played back in a headset. I think it's harder to make those look photographically correct, right? Because yes, you can approximate the world with polygons, but again, polygons are just an intermediate step in between the light we actually see, right? That said, they are real, right? They're as real as a two-dimensional photograph is, right?
Sure.
These are all simulacra on some level. So I think we're going to get both cinematic and interactive polygon experiences in the future. I think in the fairly near future, we're going to have more light field approaches as well. And frankly, we're going to get hybrid approaches, right? Things that mix and blend light fields and polygons. The only reason we're talking about light fields right now is because it's not in market yet. Yeah. If it were in market, we would just be talking about the experiences themselves. We're sort of at the evangelism stage before there's anything really we can point to. And when they're finally in market, it's just going to be one of many options for creators that'll have its own trade-offs, right? And one of those trade-offs is going to be, it's just simply not going to be interactive in the way that a polygon-based model can be.
Cool. Yeah. No, I think that's fair. Wow. We have a lot of people outside watching us
audience,
now.
Right? Don't feel self-conscious. Look, the virtual audience listening is far larger than the 20 people that just walked into the room.
Yeah. It actually is. I was looking at the stats today and I was like, just surprised at a year. It's just been a year actually for a year and a month now for this podcast. And like people really seem to be eating up, you know, trying to understand.
Well, up till now, we're going to ruin it. people are like, man, I cannot stand
these words.
Grab this podcast. Gotten. Yeah.
Oh, cameras. We can talk about cameras all day. I mean, I think
that's kind of my gig.
That's why you're the CEO of a camera company, I guess.
I'm some form of executive officer.
Then let's talk a little bit about Visby. Why start a light field company and what are you hoping to achieve?
You know, I always tell my 5-year-old son, why is a really complicated question.
How would you rather?
I'm happy to engage with why. The sort of history of it was that I was trying to build a camera to go shoot with. I was trying to start a content creation studio and I kind of wanted a better tool. In the background, though, I'd done a little bit of reading about light fields kind of circa when Lytra was first getting started. And so I kind of thought light fields felt like a good approach. I had no idea how hard it was going to be.
Oh, man.
But I took the research papers I collected over the years and sent them to a friend of mine from college. She was like, hey, you're a physicist. You can like figure this stuff out. And 6 months of research and back and forth kind of led to some ideas that we felt were just so compelling we had to follow them through.
Wow.
So the history of it, the arc of it is not that I set out and said, I'm going to go build a light field company. It's going to be amazing. It was that I really wanted to create some cool experiences.
Yeah.
And the research we did kind of led us down this path and we realized that this was not a small project, but it was definitely a worthwhile project. So it is at its heart, it's always been motivated by wanting to go out and make amazing images. And unfortunately, it's metastasized to the point where I'm really going to be helping other people make great images, which is great. This is a lovely outcome.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm just happy if there's beautiful stuff out there. So that's why I'm excited, you know, for what Visby's working on. I'm excited for what Lytra's working on. I'm excited for what 8i is working on. I just really think it's an exciting time as the medium starts to mature. You know, we're still catching up with the headsets.
Yeah.
Everyone likes to bang on the headsets and say they're not there yet.
No.
Well, the software stack's way further behind.
Right.
And I don't know if that addresses the why totally directly.
No, I think so. Yeah. And you see a whole lack of investment and focus on trying to develop these types of tools for to create, you know, more compelling content, and you want to be one of those.
Yeah, I mean, well, I hope there's less lack of investment. We're
and I mean, I meant not investment in terms of money, but in terms of like just brain thought and people
thinking about it. Yeah, I think there are a lot of people thinking very hard about this, both on the volumetric side and the light field side. Right. And there actually is no shortage of investment money going into it. It's just these things take time.
Yeah.
I think that we all got, if I may say, as an industry, we got kind of blindsided by this video game peripheral that ended up being this powerful engine for everything else too.
Right.
And the everything else too just needs more work, and it's just going to take some time. The good news is there's good people working on it, and there's lots of investors that are helping out, and I think it's going to be an exciting few years.
Awesome. What's the next milestone for people to look at, I guess?
Well, if Visby does everything right, oh, you mean in general or for Visby?
Let's do both.
Okay, so let me say Visby directly. If we do everything right, you're probably not even going to know you're using our technology. We're very much like down in the weeds, you know, the entire stack really, but like a core technology that we hope will be powering the tools that people are using in the near future. For the medium in general and light field specifically, I think that we're going to see a couple of years of rapid progress in terms of the fidelity, quality, and just beauty of the experiences that we're getting out there. Mm. I think the video games and game-like experiences are way ahead. There's some really great stuff being done there. And there's some great storytelling going on with what are functionally video game tools. And I think that that tool set's just going to get bigger and larger and may start pulling in more traditional filmmakers, because the tool set's going to look a little bit more like traditional film shoot and traditional post-production. And that's going to be exciting because it's just, we're going to get more voices.
Awesome. And I think last time when we were talking, you were predicting that Lytro will have something out for people to see like a couple of months, and turns out they are. So
yeah,
that's one, I guess that's one milestone.
I guess my prediction doesn't really get to be entered into the ledger since
yeah.
we canned that last recording, but
I'll give it to you anyway.
Thanks. I appreciate that, Oz.
Awesome. So how can people reach you?
How do I want people to reach me? We have a website, visby.io.
Visby.io.
There's a link on there somewhere that does eventually wind its way through the internets and reach me. And that's a good way. Stop by Upload. That's a good way too.
That's right. We I think we have an article or two. Well, you've written actually on
I've Upload. Written, I think it was 15 or 16 articles, but the most recent.
Really?
Like, yeah. The most recent was November of 2015. So you got to dig through the archives a bit. They were kind of like the early speculative light field stuff or camera stuff back in the day. And then, you know, I got a little bit busy with starting Visby. Yeah. But I hang around Upload.
That's right.
The physical Upload collective in San Francisco. I can occasionally be found haunting the place.
You will find lots of camera geeks up and around Upload SF.
Geeks of many different stripes.
Oh my God. God. If you find Ryan here, he'll be talking about light field cameras. If you find me here, I'll be talking about mixed reality cameras. Find other people that we'll be talking about 360 cameras. There's find stereo labs. They'll be talking about depth cameras. Yeah, there's a lot of cameras in this space.
There are. Yes. Imaging is a big thing that goes on here. And other cool stuff too. Experiences all over the map.
Yeah.
All across the stack. Yeah. It's a really cool space.
Awesome. So I guess people can find Visby at visby.io.
Oh yeah. I forget that it's not necessarily obvious when it's spoken.
Yeah.
There's a story behind the name too, but it's beyond the scope of the podcast.
And your name, Ryan Dam, D-A-M-M.
I answered a Dam or Dom, either one.
Dom. Oh, okay.
D-A-M-M.
Is that a Dutch name?
I don't know. Ellis Island name, you know?
Okay.
Who knows where it came from originally.
Yeah. And you can find me at on Twitter at AzadUX, AZADUX, and you can find the Research VR podcast on Twitter at ResearchVRcast. You can email us at researchvrcast@gmail.com. Send us questions, suggestions, and please rate us on iTunes. Actually, give us a 5 stars and a comment, just because it helps our rankings when people look for VR, you know, science and VR, and or you know, just VR podcasts in general. I want more people that are interested in VR to know a little bit more about the technical side of how it all works, minus the you know, the prerequisite of going through full 4 years of physics or, you know, neuroscience and whatnot and understanding it. So hopefully this was an episode that actually helped break down some of the jargon that, you know, exists around just light fields and the cameras, the displays, into understanding what they actually are and how they matter to you. So there'll be a lot more coming around this time, and I'd love to just bring you on every time we see something new and interesting happening.
Yeah, man, light I'm fields, here.
You'll be here to debunk those products. Be like,
debunking.
Yeah, well, we need someone that knows, you know, what they're talking about, these displays. I can sit here and BS all I want and say that I know.
There's also just a lot of uncertainty, right?
I mean, yeah.
There's some stuff. Anyway, we won't get into which very large, heavily funded companies.
So. Keep your eyes out. Lytro is going to release some stuff soon enough. And thank you all again. And hope you're liking the podcast. Thank you, Ryan, for joining us.
Cheers. Thanks for having me, Oz.
Bye.